Welcome to JS on Politics. I'm your host, Greg Borowski. So we're 124 days from the November election, 11 days from the Republican convention in Cleveland, and 18 days from the Democratic convention in Philadelphia. We'll get to all that because we're going to start first at the local level by catching up on issues such as the battle over who should head the Department of City Development in Milwaukee. We'll also look at fallout from Hillary Clinton and her private email server, as well as the VP jockeying. Then we'll hear from Christian Schneider and James Causey on Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and more. We'll get their winners and losers, and of course we'll take some viewer questions. But let's start at the local level with an introduction of our panel. Here we have Mary Spicuzza, who covers City Hall and other breaking news issues. Bill Glauber, who's been covering the U.S. Senate race for us. So let's start at City Hall. So most people don't really follow who's the head of the Department of City Development until every couple of years the Common Council says, we don't really like this guy. But what's going on with Rocky Marcoux and his position?
Right. So Rocky has butted heads with some aldermen over the years, most notably Tony Zielinski, who has been a pretty vocal critic of his for actually, I would say, more than 4 years, but especially over the last 4 years. So he had been looking to block his reappointment to his position, which he successfully did yesterday, at least for now. It's going to go back to committee, assuming that the mayor could withdraw his name and just say, you know, we're done, we'll pick somebody else. I'd be kind of surprised if that happens because the mayor has been a pretty vocal advocate of Rocky Marcoux and been, you know, praised his work.
What is the root of the opposition here? Is that they don't think he's doing enough, that he's doing too much downtown and not in the neighborhoods? What's the criticism?
Yeah, it depends who you ask. I think a lot of the criticism that you'll hear is that he is too focused on downtown and not focused enough on the neighborhoods. And they point to, you know, sure, he's done the Bucks Arena and this explosion of growth downtown, but is this benefiting people in our districts, people in the neighborhoods? So there are also some kind of long-time fights between him and some of the aldermen. Obviously, Tony Zielinski was a critic of an affordable housing project in Bayview. There was a fight over a skate park. They've had bad blood over the years, and other council members have as well.
Yeah, but this is sort of, you know, Bill, you've covered watched politics for a long time. It's downtown versus the neighborhoods, downtown versus the neighborhoods. But if there's a new building or something downtown coming onto the tax rolls, that helps everybody, doesn't it?
It does help everybody, and the, you know, what's happening, especially with the arena, with the new arena, they expect some development to push out north from there into those neighborhoods there. And so, you know, it's a very unusual time to go after him, but it happens every 4 years, especially when you see all the cranes downtown Milwaukee. I think the general public would probably think, you know, things are actually moving along pretty well. Common Council has its own idea. I thought the most stunning thing of yesterday was they actually silenced Rocky Marcoux. He had no comment. Anybody knows Rocky Marcoux, it's very tough to get him to be quiet. So that was sort of stunning.
So they did that. So that's going to proceed along with some more votes and action. The same thing happened the last time, and he ultimately got reappointed.
He did, yeah. So, I mean, he could very well survive and get reappointed. This is a different council, different leadership, so we'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. It'll go back to committee, and then assuming that...
One of the things that is moving along is streetcar funding, right? So the council just put its package of some more funding together.
Mm-hmm. For the streetcar extension.
That didn't seem to have much controversy, at least among the aldermen it didn't.
It didn't. I mean, it would have been a shocker if they had gone against this. Basically, they had gotten some federal funding for the extension. This was the Common Council approving the local portion of that funding, the matching dollars, basically. So not a surprise, but still, you know, it's like the next leg of the streetcar is on its way.
All right. And Bill, let me ask you about the U.S. Senate race. We've got, you know, Ron Johnson and Russ Feingold continually, you know, sniping back and forth, as you'd expect. But what's the latest at the Senate?
Sniping about the Clinton email scandal, which the FBI, of course, saying that no charges should be filed, the Justice Department agreeing. Ron Johnson wants to investigate, or at least he's asked questions of the FBI as head of the Homeland Security Committee about how the investigation went. Russ Feingold appeared Thursday morning in Milwaukee, and he discussed the issue, said that he was troubled by Clinton's use of the email system, but that, you know, it was good that they were moving on past that. But he charged Republicans led by Ron Johnson just want to prolong this to tarnish Hillary Clinton. So it's no surprise that it's landed in the middle of the Senate race, We have a poll coming out next week by Marquette University Law School, which will help set the dynamic of the race going into the summer. As you probably know, Ron Johnson has been behind in all the polls. Russ Feingold has consistently been ahead in this race.
Yeah, one of the interesting things is Senator Johnson, with his role on the Oversight Committee, he gives him kind of this broad purview to investigate all kinds of stuff and insert himself into a lot of issues. How do you think he's been managing that role?
I think it's been an interesting role for him. You know, it enabled him to, you know, with some controversy on all sides, get to sort of the bottom of the scandal at the Tomah VA. He's looking into asking questions about the shootings down in Orlando. He says that they've moved, I think, 83 bipartisan measures out of that committee. So it's an interesting use of the committee. And, you know, he is a committee chair. It's an important role. And he oversees a committee that basically is the chief oversight for the Senate of the federal government. So there's a lot of power in there to extract information. So anytime he is asking for information, you have to take it serious.
All right.
We'll just have to see if people know who he is next week when the poll comes out.
Right. He has faced all of it. Who are these guys even after all these years?
Right.
All right. Well, we'll leave our discussion there and shift now to the national level with this taped segment looking at the presidential election. I'm joined now by Craig Gilbert, our Washington bureau chief, to talk about what's happening on the presidential trail. And Craig, of course, the big news this week was Hillary Clinton, you know, not going to face charges on the issues with the email server and all those things. So I guess the plus is better to have this come out now than in October. What's your general assessment of how what the fallout is here for the Democratic presumptive nominee?
Well, obviously, a lot of negative things being said by the director of the FBI about her recklessness in handling her emails, things that will be, I'm sure, repeated in Republican television ads, if there ever are Republican television ads against Hillary Clinton, could have been worse. And that's very significant because the cloud of criminal investigation has been lifted. I mean, the interesting thing was it was kind of a microcosm of the whole campaign in the sense that there were sort of things for both sides and both candidates to feel bad about, or at least feel a little bit depressed about. The criticism of Hillary Clinton from the FBI director, but also on the Republican side, the kind of, you know, the disappointment of not having criminal charges against Hillary Clinton, and also the way Republicans handled it, the way Donald Trump handled it. More Trump controversies kind of distracting from the overall message. A microcosm of the campaign in one day.
So I think some of the skepticism or reaction from some people was this all kind of predetermined? I mean, she's on a campaign trip with President Obama. Just last week, Loretta Lynch says, you know, oh, I'll go by with whatever the FBI says. And then right away we find out it was not going to be to move forward. But what's your sense of sort of the skepticism out there among folks on that point?
Well, I think Republicans are going to be skeptical under almost any circumstances because they're so deeply suspicious of the Obama administration and of Hillary Clinton. So that's not surprising. I mean, the FBI director, James Comey, is a well-respected figure in both parties. He did say that there was no coordination in the announcement, that he did this on his own and did it on his own timing. So people will have to sort that out. We're hearing this week from the FBI director, part of that process of being grilled by Republican members of Congress, and we'll see how that shakes out.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about two of our members of the Wisconsin delegation, the House Speaker Paul Ryan and Senator Ron Johnson. They both had some, you know, pretty sharp comments the other day about the decision. What was your sense of how they responded to it?
Well, I think they were pretty aggressive in their comments, but I think they're also cautious about going too far in attacking the FBI and attacking this particular FBI director because he is a respected guy. Paul Ryan, for Paul Ryan, his comments had a real edge to them. I mean, he was, you know, basically suggesting that the decision made no sense at all, was irrational. The Clintons are operating under their own set of rules. They're operating like they're above the law. He didn't personally criticize James Comey, but he expressed a massive amount of disdain and skepticism for this ruling, which is a very harsh language and rhetoric on the part of Paul Ryan compared to the language that he usually uses.
All right, let's look ahead. We've got the conventions coming up, Republicans first and then Democrats. But who, on the vice presidential front, what are the rumblings out there, and who would you expect to make their selection first?
Well, I think we're going to hear from the Republicans first because their convention is first, and then Democrats can decide how they, you know, about the timing of their own announcement, whether they want to roll it out during the Republican convention or wait until the Republican convention is over. But I think we're going to hear from Donald Trump. The expectation is we'll hear from him before the actual convention begins, which means we'll hear from him next week. We're hearing about a pretty short list, which isn't surprising because a lot of prominent Republicans, A, don't like Donald Trump, B, don't want to be his running mate, and C, are people maybe he doesn't want as his running mate. So the short list that people are talking about includes former Speaker Newt Gingrich. It includes New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who was a candidate and is now and was but early on board the Trump train after he dropped out, Indiana Governor Mike Pence. But we're also starting to hear about other people that have taken themselves out of the running, like Bob Corker, the Senate chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee. It's a short list, and Donald Trump is going to overshadow the running mate even more than presidential candidates normally do. So I don't think that the fate of the campaign rests on this decision.
All right. That leads to my final question. Then, which side has more at stake, do you think, or more to gain by making a smart pick or the right pick when it comes to the vice president?
You know, I think there's a limit to how much a running mate can impact this race for the simple reason that both these candidates have high negatives, and they have high negatives with the other side. And I think people have such strong feelings about them that it's hard to imagine too many voters casting a vote on the basis of who the vice presidential candidate is. Now, you always have the option of making an electoral choice. One of the people that Hillary Clinton is looking at is Tim Kaine, the former governor and current senator from the state of Virginia, which is a hugely critical battleground. So it may make sense for her, especially since she's ahead in the polls, to try to lock in a state like Virginia, which would make it extremely hard for Donald Trump to put together an electoral majority.
All right. Well, we'll leave our discussion there for today, and we'll be back with you next week, Craig, as we look ahead then at the Republican convention in Cleveland. Thanks, Craig.
Go ahead.
All right. We're back live now with two of our editorial page columnists, James Causey with me here in the studio, Christian Schneider in Madison. And we want to continue this discussion of national politics because it's been a heck of an interesting week. They all seem to be. But yeah. Let's talk about Hillary Clinton and the email server. James, big problem for her still, or... good news for Hillary? How do you read that?
Well, it's good news. I mean, it could be worse. I think people, for her, it hurts her a little bit, but I'm glad that now we can start to put it behind her and she can move forward. I think the person who it hurts the most is Bernie Sanders. He almost needs to just bow out now. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, I think with our short attention spans, I think we start to put this behind us. But she has to avoid like these little pitfalls along the way. But I think, you know, short term, this is, you know, it still hurts, but it'll help her in the long run.
Yeah, Christian, I mean, what do you think on balance? I mean, obviously she's not being charged, so that's good, but it does maybe coalesce some of the opposition against her to say, well, the system is rigged and she's skating by. What was your take on the results this week?
Right, I'm not so sure this actually helps her all that much. Because when FBI Director Comey came out and he made his announcement on Tuesday, I mean, he laid out a whole bunch of stuff that she has been dishonest about, that she has done that probably broke the law, but he didn't have enough evidence to bring a case. So, she avoids maybe a prosecution, but now she's going to be prosecuted in the court of public opinion, where you have millions of voters who are casting judgment on her instead of a jury. So I don't know that this helps her all that much. And then, of course, you know, you've got Donald Trump out there who, if he were actually disciplined, he would go out there and, you know, make the case against her based on all this stuff, based on talking about how the system is rigged and things like that. So, but he's not that disciplined, and so I mean the case is there to be made. I don't know if he's going to be able to make it though.
Yeah, well, let me ask you, Christian, on the because we've got some of our state politicians. You know, House Speaker Paul Ryan and Ron Johnson are engaged on this issue now. Are they? How would you rate how they're approaching it? Because I mean, they want to, be critical of Hillary Clinton, but maybe not so much about the FBI and its role. What's your sense of how they're approaching it?
Right. I mean, James Comey, FBI director, has a very good reputation among Republicans. He's been a Republican almost all his life, he said in his testimony today. So, they don't want to go after him for his for not charging Secretary Clinton, but they do have to play the line of saying she's completely unqualified now. Paul Ryan was really rough in going after her. Now, today he announced that he wants to take away any security clearance or any security briefings that Hillary Clinton has. So I think it's going to be all Clinton all the time, and I don't think they're really going to get into the FBI's decision all that much.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's shift attention a little bit to, and I want to ask you about this one too, Christian. So yesterday, in reference, Donald Trump didn't take full advantage, is maybe a charitable way of saying it, of this opportunity to make his case, because he's returned to this issue of Star of David being used on a tweet with Hillary Clinton and all the anti-Semitic implications of that. I mean, what's going on with our friend Donald Trump?
I mean, you can go to any number of the 30 columns I've written saying that, this is kind of where we were headed. I mean, a reasonable candidate would have at some point been able to, like he gave the speech yesterday where he leads with this topic. I mean, something bad happens to your campaign or you do something bad for your campaign, and he comes out and he starts talking about it right away instead of changing the subject. And this happens again and again and again. Something bad happens to Hillary Clinton that you could actually make an issue of, and then he stumbles over, he makes some anti-Semitic or racist remark. And then that's all we're talking about. He comes out and he says, starts singing the praises of Saddam Hussein, which, it's absolutely unbelievable. And so he's stepping on his message. And, in a week that really should have been bad for Hillary Clinton, it's going to turn out to be even worse for Donald Trump, I think.
Yeah, well, James, let me ask you, we often end up evaluating what Donald Trump does through sort of the traditional prism of how politics works, or we expect them to work, but... Mm-hmm. That's not how he operates.
No, it's not.
Does this help him with his supporters? I mean, if he's fighting the media and so they're out to get me, it sort of presents this aura that every time there's something bad about him, if you can frame it that
right.
It's not true, they're out to get me, it maybe minimizes some of that.
It's funny how, Chris, how you try to frame him as not doing things a traditional way. Donald Trump has never been traditional, and that's what his appeal is. I think he's just going, he goes off the cuff, he likes to do that. And he doesn't follow tradition, and that's why he's in the position he's in today. So you're kind of stuck with what you have.
Well, it seems, Chris, maybe because your take on this, it's like Donald Trump wants to be enjoying what he's doing. I mean, he certainly he wants to be Donald Trump, right? So, every time they try to rein him in a little bit and give him a teleprompter, he's more natural as a person, I think, in doing what he did yesterday, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, there's no evidence at all that he's going to rein in, what he says or does. He had a meeting with Senate Republicans this morning where he threatened three senators, like, get on board, let's unify the party, or I'm going to go after you in my speeches. Like, what is that?
Unify the party, right?
Yeah, I mean, how does that unify the party? I mean, this is absolutely insane. I was ready to jump off a ledge a year ago, and so you can only imagine where I am now, but. So it's gotten to the point where, politicians can't even say his name. He's like Voldemort. You say his name and something bad happens to you. That's where the party is now.
Don't jump off the ledge. We've still got you on the rest of the show. After that, it's a different question. But let's talk about the Voldemort and the not named. So I want to show a tweet here that Governor Scott Walker sent out yesterday where he's sort of been in this, I'll support the nominee, maybe I won't, maybe I will. So his tweet was, last August I said I'd support the GOP nominee. It's now clear who the RNC delegates will vote to nominate, and he is better than she is. So When you parse that out and diagram those sentences, he's backing Donald Trump, sort of, yes, maybe, unenthusiastically. James, what's your sense of that
tweet? I mean, what other choice do you have? There's not going to be another candidate to take his place. I mean, you're stuck with what you have. I think we had this conversation about a month ago, Chris. We talked about this. You're stuck with him. So you almost have to ride this horse until you can't ride him anymore.
So we were joking earlier, Christian, that he had endorsed a pronoun rather than a person. But where is Scott Walker in this? In that he's going to speak at the convention, right? So he wants to be a good Republican and do what you would expect or need, but he also isn't clearly enthusiastic about it.
Right. Republicans at this point are just, you know, kind of holding their breath, closing their eyes, and hoping this all goes away. And then, you know, 2 years from now, they come back and win a lot more governorships. You know, typically in off years, the opposition party does a lot better. So I think they all just want this to go away. Scott Walker is going to be at convention. Maybe he's going to be there to swoop in and save the day. Who knows? But, his tweet yesterday, which is, you know, you don't need to hear me say it. They're basically everybody's kind of YouTube-proofing themselves for like two to four years down the road, where you're not filmed saying the words Donald Trump, I support Donald Trump. And James is right. There's probably not going to be any other options. So, we just kind of have to hope this all goes away soon.
Are you conceding this race already, Chris?
I wrote the race is over. I mean, I think it's a done deal. I think it's, when you look at the way the swing states break down, I mean, you've got Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, New Hampshire, Virginia, North Carolina, those types of states. Donald Trump has to run the table in every one of those states in order to, other than maybe New Hampshire, to win the nomination, because, you know, just kind of the way states break down, Republicans are already so far behind. So basically Hillary Clinton has to do is win one of those states, and she becomes president. And, you know, so even with a typical generic Republican candidate, they would have been way behind. But now you've got one that's not going to win any of those swing states. So, you know, as much as we like to sit here and talk about, oh, this is an exciting campaign, maybe Trump can do it or not, I kind of think it's in the bag, and I just don't see any situation where he wins.
All right. Well, here at JSM Politics, we're not conceding the race because we have a weekly show to fill.
I can call
November.
It right
so
now.
Chris, be careful what you're doing there, buddy.
Let's
go to our winners and losers of the week, and we're going to start, Christian, with your winner of the week.
My winner of the week is Saddam Hussein. Who would have thought that he would have gotten such a moving, tearful tribute from a major party nominee in 2016? So, good for him. Good. Maybe if Donald Trump is elected, maybe he'll re-erect his statue, maybe right there in D.C. because he was such a, you know, Saddam Hussein terrorist hunter. He was, so good at going after the bad guy.
All right, James, let's go with your winner of the week.
Oh, the winners of the week is NBA free agents. They are cleaning house. People like Mike Conley. Mike Conley signed a contract for $153 million. He's never made an All-Star game. But what makes that even better, the fans benefit too, especially here in Milwaukee where we have a new arena going up, and the players have to pay a tax, and so that helps pay off the new arena. So that's pretty good for us too.
All right, and Christian, let me go to you for your loser of the week.
Yeah, I'm taking the flip side of that. I'm saying the loser is the NBA with the signing, the Golden State Warriors signing of Kevin Durant, who, I mean, you take a 73-win team and make it even better. I mean, it's almost unfair, and I think most other teams are playing for second place at this point. The NBA, people think the NBA sells dunks and three-pointers and stuff, but the NBA sells competition. People go to see their teams because they think they can win. They think they might get better. They have a chance. Now there's really no chance. And, you know, some of the old style teams, the Bulls and Lakers and Celtics, you know, they dominated and people still went to go see them. But there was a sense back then that it was more organic. I mean, a lot of the players on those teams are drafted, stayed with the teams. And now we're in the era of kind of the super team where players just go, you know, get together, decide to all go via free agency. And I just think it's bad for the league. It's bad for small cities like Oklahoma City who's not going to be able to keep their free agents. So they're my loser.
But the Bucks beat Golden State last year. last
they
season.
They did.
Anything can happen.
Anything can happen.
All right, so James, to your loser of the week.
My loser of the week is Bernie Sanders. This FBI investigation not only benefited Hillary, but it hurt Bernie. It was like the final nail in the coffin. So if Bernie is smart, he'd just, you know, fade on out. Throw a support there and just say, see ya.
So we'll take that anything can happen bit back and say that.
Anything is not possible in this situation. It's over.
Okay.
See, Bernie Sanders is the Milwaukee Bucks of the presidential race? Is that it?
Yeah. We'll parse those words the same way we did with Walker's tweet and figure out what James really meant. All right, let's go to our viewer questions now. This is the first one is from James in Bayview, and it kind of plays off to what you said, James. So I'm going to ask this of you, James, in the studio. So why is Bernie Sanders still hanging around? Doesn't he get that this is all over?
Well, I think Bernie, his last hope was the FBI investigation. If it would have turned out bad for Hillary, he could have came on in and saved the day. I think now that this is pretty much over, he needs to bow out. Because if he sticks around now, he just seems like a old mad man, and that's not good for anyone. He had a good run, but it's time for him to bow.
Yeah, Christian, what's your thought on that? I mean, on the Republican side, people cleared the field maybe even a little too early, it turns out, with Donald Trump. But what? Why is Bernie Sanders still sticking at it? They've gone through the platform, and what's left for him to try to gain here?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to, the convention's coming up. Maybe he just wants some more attention at convention, and a lot of people are still pretty loyal to Bernie. So maybe he feels like he's almost got kind of his group of voters out there that can swing things this way and that. So. I don't know. Maybe he just likes the attention. Maybe he just, he figures this is his last shot and he's going to stay as long as he can.
All right. Let me ask this one to you, Christian, from Rick in GB. He says, what changed Walker's opinion of Trump from the time he dropped out to allow other candidates to stop Trump to this month when he will at least give tacit approval to Trump by speaking at the convention? So did anything change for Walker, or is it he just didn't like him then and doesn't like him now but will, participate in the convention?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that his personal feelings on Trump have changed. I mean, he's got to play good soldier now, and he's going to dutifully show up, and hopefully at convention he talks about the more positive aspects of Republicanism and conservatism, which is what he's urging Trump to do. I think he tweeted today that Trump should be talking more about the positive stuff and maybe going after Hillary Clinton some more. So I mean, his rhetoric on Trump may have changed a little bit, but I don't think his feelings on him have changed today. I wrote that he's almost like a vampire eating garlic bread at this point. Like he's just got to swallow it down and take it and just kind of hope it all goes away soon.
All right, and this last question I'll throw to James. It was listed as from No Name, which is the name, apparently.
Okay.
It says, I keep hearing making America great again for the middle class, but the reason America was great for the middle class was because of unions, pensions, and owners who shared in their profits. Aren't the Republicans to blame for busting unions, eliminating pensions, and outsourcing? And we just put that one right across the middle of the plate for you, James.
Yeah, that's almost too easy. I got to just take it in. But no, it's not just all the Republicans' fault. It's a lot of people's fault. It's too easy to say, yeah, it's the Republicans that busted up unions and did all this other stuff. There's a lot of politicians involved in this. And, one thing that made the middle class strong was jobs, too, livable wage jobs, and we just don't have that anymore.
All right, I think that's where we'll leave it for today. We're going to spend the next week keeping Christian off the ledge. And we'll be back at the same time to do a preview of the Republican convention. In the meantime, you can follow all of our work and stories on the race at jsonline.com. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks.